This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, hello, friends. It's nice to have you with us once again. In this special edition of the program, we're going to talk about jamming. Bill Whitaker, the voice of America, will join us to talk about what they do to get around jamming from the Chinese. Then we'll be joined by Romantas Palenskis, the former Minister of Communications of Lithuania, who has written a number of books on jamming from the former USSR and Lithuania. We have this and much more, so stay tuned. Media Network Plus promises to propagate your brainwaves. Now, normally at this time, I turn it over to Paulette for a look at some of the news from the world of communications, but she's on a well-deserved holiday. I suspect somewhere visiting some vineyards or something like that. Anyway, moving on. If you tune up and down the shortwave dial, there's a chance that you will hear a piece of music that is very common. Now, let's see if you know what it is. Well, that's the crash, bang, boom of Firedrake. Firedrake is the infamous Chinese jammer which targets Western broadcasters like the Voice of America, BBC World Service, Radio Free Asia, Voice of Tibet, and others. The main jamming facility is located on Hainan Island in the South China Sea, but is controlled in Beijing by the Ministry of Propaganda. They also have a large number of staff that monitor 24 hours a day frequency used by Western broadcasters that target the PRC. So, if a broadcaster makes a frequency change, they can send a message right away to the facility and start jamming the new frequency. Another form of jamming done by the Chinese is by using domestic stations. And what I mean by that is taking a station like China National 1, putting them on the same frequency as a broadcaster, and drowning them out. Now, if you were in China and tuned to Radio Free Asia's Chinese service, this is what you would hear. Well, that's what it sounds like if you tune to Radio Free Asia in China. They're using China National 1 to jam them. Jamming, of course, is nothing new to international broadcasting. It goes back to World War II when the Germans tried to jam broadcasts from the BBC and clandestine stations broadcasting to Nazi-occupied Germany. After World War II, jamming was also a menace. This time from the Soviet Union, jamming broadcasts from Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe, and the VOA. Today, jamming continues with countries like China, Cuba, North Korea, Iran, Zimbabwe, and a small handful of others. Bill Whitaker is with the Voice of America in Washington and tells us how they dealt with jamming in the days of the Soviet Union.
Well, traditionally, our approach to jamming has always been just to put more stuff on the air. There's really no way to evade jamming. For a very short period, we were able to use the Tangier relay station to propagate into parts of Western Russia when their jamming from Central and Eastern Russia couldn't propagate because of a twilight immunity kind of a thing, where we had a higher MUF than the jammer did, and people could hear us on very high frequencies. But that was a kind of a unique geographic opportunity that didn't last, you know, but a couple hours every evening maybe. In the case of China, it's been basically the same. If we put on 8 or 10 or 12 frequencies, there's some hope that one or more of them will get through. Chinese have been very efficient at jamming, and they catch up with changes that we make, and they are able to cover just about anything that we put on pretty well.
Well, something that's very different about the jamming that comes from China, the Soviets, which would use a noise or something, China is broadcasting either Fire Drake, which is the traditional Chinese classical music, or they're also putting domestic stations on shortwave frequencies.
Yeah, that's what we hear most of. I just listened to some this morning before you called, VOA frequencies from today, and all I heard was co-channel China National Radio stuff. And you know, it varies what they use depending on, you know, the political sensitivities or, you know, what they have handy. And it also depends on the broadcaster. Some broadcasters are more susceptible to the we call it Chinese opera jamming than we are, RFA in particular, or other languages like Tibetan, which they really want to cover up a little bit more than they even worry about Mandarin. So it just depends. But all of it is very effective. It's multiple use of transmitters. There's some indication of some ground wave jamming in larger cities, and it's a pretty big affair.
Now, the thing about jamming is that a lot of people can get around it by, let's say, tuning to the VOA's frequencies, let's say, for Europe or Africa. But because of the time difference, sometimes it's not very convenient. But with jamming, has the VOA ever looked at the possibility that some people have suggested maybe switching frequencies quite often?
No, you lose more listeners than you ever retain that way, because we figure most, I've personally seen, most listeners are not sitting there with digital shortwave radios, communications receivers to chase you. They've got a slide rule dial, an older radio, or a cheap radio. And if I were them, I'd be scared to move that thing for fear of never being able to find the frequency that I was originally on. And I think that's the case. Those few people that are still listening to shortwave are probably using cheap radios or very old radios. And I've never seen any payback from that, because there's only so many frequencies on the band. And if you move very often or to very many, you're going to start interfering with other people on the band.
Now, the jamming from China, do they also interfere with broadcasts not targeted towards China but to other areas of the Asia-Pacific?
Well, they jam Tibetan. I don't think they pay much attention to Cantonese anymore. We've shown that they do jam, oddly enough, not VOA, but or not RFE, but VOA Uzbek broadcast, as well as BBC Uzbek. And our theory has always been that it's because it's understandable by Uyghurs that they jam that. But other than that, that's about all they do, this directly.
And what about broadcasts in Korean?
We don't know that it's the Chinese. We have more reason. We're fairly certain it's the North Koreans that jam any, rather ineffectively, but try and jam broadcasts in Korean. We don't have any indication that the Chinese are lending them any assistance in that.
Right. Now, the Voice of America, being a U.S. government organization like most other international broadcasters, does the VOA, to your knowledge, have meetings with Chinese officials about jamming, or is that something that there's no point of mentioning it because it's not going to change anything?
We've only discussed it directly with them once, back in 1993, and it was in the run-up to a summer signing of the Most Favored Nation Agreement treaty, and the Chinese wanted to see that signed. So it took a number of steps that we wanted taken in order to kind of ameliorate our government. And one of them was to have direct talks about what we called mutual interference issues. And we held those discussions for about 3 days in different meetings. And on the very day that we were supposed to assign some accord with them, which would not have said a whole lot except that we had discussed these things, President Clinton then signed the Most Favored Nation Agreement, and the meeting was immediately canceled. So the meeting—it was clear to me, at least, and I think most of the people there at the embassy—that the meetings were in order to take care of any issues that remained before Most Favored Nation treaty was signed, and that was about it. Other than that, it doesn't get mentioned, as nor does it with most other nations, and nor has it ever with the Soviet Union or Cuba. So it's not acceptable. We send in complaints on a monthly basis to the ITU and to the Chinese, to the Cubans, and anyone else jamming us, and that's basically just to follow the paper trail.
Now, with the jamming, let's say is done by Cuba or China, is it really effective from a listener point of view, or are Cuba and China just spending way too much money to block international broadcasts that are getting in anyway?
Sidestepping the issue, if anybody's listening, if there weren't jamming, the effectiveness of the Chinese jamming is quite real. It's very effective, and it would prevent most people, unless they were extremely determined, to listen to our broadcasts and those of RFA and other people who are jammed. And whereas the Cuban jamming is not so effective, and it's difficult for them because it's a small island and there are skip zones, and it's difficult to block to Marquee's broadcasts. But nonetheless, they make a valid effort, I think.
Now, with China, the thing that I'm surprised about is China, which is a member of the ITU. What is the ITU's reaction when VOA or other broadcasts complain to them about the jamming in China?
None that I've seen.
Right.
The Chinese are also a member of the HFCC and set at tables in the same room with the rest of us and coordinate their frequency usage. So
right.
I don't really think that one doesn't seem to bear relation to the other.
Right. Is that because maybe they don't see it as being important?
I don't know why it is.
Yeah.
I don't think they are bothered by it, so they don't. It's not as big an issue for them.
That was Bill Whitaker of the Voice of America. We now go behind the Iron Curtain, more specifically to Lithuania. During the height of the Cold War, many Soviet satellites would get their orders from Moscow to jam Western broadcasters. Rimantas Prianskis, who was the former Minister of Communications in Lithuania after 1989, was also a regular shortwave listener in his younger days. When he got older and the Cold War ended, he started to investigate the jamming done by Lithuania. He has been able to uncover a large amount of documents on how jamming was done, including pictures of staff that worked at the jamming stations. We called him up at his home in Vilnius. My first question to him was it the Lithuanian government that decided on which broadcasts to his country were to be targeted?
I cannot say that it was a Lithuanian activity to jam the foreign radio broadcasting. Well, all commands came from Moscow, and the All-Union Ministry of Communications was responsible for the jamming operations. And in Lithuania, in a small country, there were five local low-power jamming stations in all five biggest cities of Lithuania, with totally roughly about 50 or 60 low-power jamming transmitters ranging from 1 kilowatt to 5 kilowatts. So I must say that was a Soviet operation, but some components of the jamming system were located in Lithuania as well.
Now, with the jamming, was it very effective? Because during that period when there was a lot of jamming going on, broadcasters, let's say like Radio Liberty and Voice of America, would just add new frequencies. So there was more and more frequencies and more jamming. But was all the jamming effective?
Yes, the jamming was quite effective, but everything depended on where you are located. For example, I started to listen to foreign radio stations since 1972, when I was living in a small southern Lithuanian town, Druskininkai, and the nearest jamming stations were roughly 100 or 120 kilometers away. So at that time, when this place was not covered by the skywave jammers, which were located far away, a couple of hours per day it was possible to listen to such programs as Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe, Voice of America, BBC, Deutsche Welle, and others. And in the late 70s, the Soviet Union jammed seven main foreign radio stations. The most intensive jamming was targeted against Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, also against Voice of America in Russian and other languages, against the British Broadcasting Corporation and Deutsche Welle. But also we had jamming of the Voice of Israel programs, of Radio Tirana programs, and of Radio Beijing programs. But for separate stations, the Soviets used the different jamming signals.
Lithuania is a relatively very small country. When jamming was occurring, was jamming targeted mainly for Vilnius, or was the jamming nationwide?
The jamming system consisted of two main components. One component was so-called Skyway for long-distance, high-power jamming stations, and in the late 70s, there were 13 such big Skyway jamming centers all over the Soviet Union, and in these 13 Skyway jamming centers, there were approximately 100 or more high-power transmitters, ranging from 100 kilowatts to 200 kilowatts or more. Mm-hmm. And additionally, there was another network of so-called low-power or ground-wave jammers, which were intended to block the biggest cities. So in the late 70s, there were such jamming facilities were installed in 81 cities of the former Soviet Union. And of those all jamming transmitters, we had five jamming stations in Lithuania alone. And the effective range of such low power in ground wave jammers was approximately between 20 and 30 kilometers away. So my small town was more than 100 kilometers away from the nearest jammers, and therefore at certain hours I was lucky to listen to some foreign radio stations.
The jamming, for example, that is done by China, they're either broadcasting China National Radio on for co-channel interference, and they're also broadcasting this traditional Chinese music, which a lot of DXers have called Fire Drake. What about in the Soviet Union and Lithuania?
At that time, there were two jamming signals. One of them was a so-called noise generator, which produced a very intensive and strong noise, electronic noise. And another type of audio jamming, of the jamming signal, was a distorted program of the Radio Mayak. The noise jamming was targeted against Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and also against Radio Tirana, mm-hmm. and against Voice of Israel. And other stations, VOA, BBC, Deutsche Welle, and Radio Beijing, were jammed with the Radio Mayak program. This program was transmitted in FM mode. Therefore, when I listened to these stations with a simple, normal AM shortwave receiver in the analog modulation, the Mayak program sounded very distorted, so it was quite annoying. But it was a political decision to use separate different jamming signals, because according to the Soviet propaganda standards, the most anti-Soviet stations were Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and the Voice of Israel, and Radio Tirana. Therefore, the Soviets used noise jamming against these stations. And other stations were mostly state-run and state-owned, like the VOA or BBC or Deutsche Welle. Therefore, another jamming audio signal was used to jam these stations.
Was this an open secret? For example, with China, I have asked government officials about jamming, and they keep saying, no, we don't jam international broadcasters, but everybody knows they do. What was the reaction, for example, let's say in Lithuania or the Soviet Union, if the question was asked by foreign media, oh, are you jamming international broadcasters? What would the reply normally be?
In the early 50s or in the 60s, the Soviet Union told to anybody that we are not jamming the foreign radio program. But in the 70s and 80s, they had another explanation that, yes, we are jamming and we have a right to jam. We have a right to defend our nations from the hostile, very angry anti-Soviet propaganda. So they told that they have a right to jam the foreign radio program.
Now, after the political system in that part of the world changed, did the jammers go off just offline at that moment, or was it around the time when Mikhail Gorbachev introduced glasnost that they started to reduce jamming?
I can say and remember that the last jamming targets were Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. They transmitted programs in maybe 15 or 17 languages of the former Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. First of all, in Russian language, in Belarusian, in Ukrainian, and many other. Radio Free Europe transmitted also in the languages of the Baltic states, in Lithuanian, Latvian, and Estonian. And this station was... the Soviet Union stopped to jam the RFPRL programs on the 30th of November of 1988. That was the last station which was jammed by the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And jamming of the Voice of America programs and of the BBC programs and of the Deutsche Welle programs was stopped 1 or 2 years earlier. Because RFPRL was the most, well, critical to the Soviet regime, and therefore it is my opinion that Kremlin and Moscow was afraid most of all of the RFPRL programs.
Now, when the jamming stopped, what happened to these jamming sites? Did they just turn them into regular shortwave transmission sites, or did they dismantle them completely?
Mostly the high-power skywave jamming centers were used for the ordinary radio broadcasting, and they could transmit Radio Moscow's program to another continent and to another countries, and they used these capacities just for normal shortwave broadcasting. In other cases, the local ground-wave jammers, which typically used low-power transmitters, 1 kilowatt or 5 kilowatt power, and most of these stations were dismantled, and only few of them were converted for broadcasting of the radio programs for the local population.
Did the Soviet Union make a lot of technical advances in jamming that are, let's say, being used by the North Koreans, Cuba, and China today?
The jamming system was quite similar all the time. The main issue is to gather as much power as possible, and also directional antennas, and it is necessary to have a good monitoring system to check the jamming targets. So the system was the same 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and even now. But of course now some countries like China, they have a lot of money, and they buy the newest up to 500 kilowatt transmitters, for example, made by Thales in France with a directional ALIS type antennas, rotatable antennas, and they have a hell of such stations, many dozen transmitters, and we can now hear in Lithuania the Chinese jamming, which was earlier almost entirely made from Chinese instrumental folk music, and now they changed, and they mostly transmit Radio Beijing programs.
The money that must have been spent by the Soviet Union and also the Lithuanian government at the time must have been extremely high, which makes me ask the question, after the political system changed and new government leaders took over, was there ever an investigation done about the jamming that had been done, an investigation done by the new government themselves?
I know the only serious study of jamming, which was written by the Czech historian Prokop Tomek, and it is a nice article, big article with a lot of facts, including money, equipment, frequencies, and all things about jamming in the former Czechoslovakia. So that is the only known big, serious, and important article. Unfortunately, I don't know any other studies which could be made in in other countries like Poland or Bulgaria or the Soviet Union. So at least now we have only one scientific article about jamming in the former Czechoslovakia, written by Prokop Tomek.
Right.
And of course, I hope that there are still documents in the archives, but it is my understanding that the local scientists in Poland or in Bulgaria or in the Eastern Germany or in the former Soviet Union in Russia, they must work in the local archives of Warsaw, of Sofia, of East Berlin, and of Moscow, because it is difficult to do serious investigation being not in the in the country.
And I was speaking there with Romantas Priaskas, the former Minister of Communications of Lithuania. And he's written a very, very interesting book. You can find a link to it at the website for this program, which, of course, is Media Network Plus. And what is that website, you may ask? Well, before I give it out, I want to tell you about the Shortwave Summer Contest that Media Network Plus is having, as well as PCJ. We're giving away, until the month of September, two shortwave radios. The shortwave radios are a DR920. And then in the month of September, we're giving away, well, those two receivers, plus a grand prize, a brand new Sanjen ATS-909X. You can find out all the information by going to www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Of course, your comments, suggestions, and ideas are always welcome. You can send us an email at mnp@pcjmedia.com. MNP, by the way, of course, stands for Media Network Plus. And that, again, is mnp@pcjmedia.com. And also, don't be afraid to look for us on Facebook. If you're afraid, well, there's something wrong. Just do a search for PCJ Media and Radio in Facebook. Click on Join the Group, and that's all you need to do. And we update it quite frequently. And you'll have the information there for our Twitter account and everything else. So do check it out. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. So on behalf of our technician, Kevin Lee, Paulette McQuarrie, who's on vacation, this is Keith Parent saying so long, take care. We'll see you all again very soon. 73s and 88s to all the ladies.